Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, all you fellow wonderful F1 fans around the world. We are back. Mid-season break is officially done, and I don't know about you, but that is always the longest 3 weeks of my life in the entire F1 calendar. I am so happy to say we are back with the first race of the second half of the 2023 season, and if you're hearing my name, that can only mean two things. One, that my name is Kelsey, and two, you are listening to the newest edition of F101. And as always, we're going to start off this episode with the hot topics. This is everything you need to know in the world of F1. We have drivers signed. We have new contract information. It's nice to see these guys getting it out of the way sooner rather than later. And it's not Lewis Hamilton. Absolutely still no word from the Mercedes camp whatsoever of what's going on with his contract. If they've terminated talks, if they're still working out on the small things. Toto Wolff's not saying anything, Hamilton's not saying anything, and at this rate, I'm just starting to wonder if they're even going to get a contract inked out before the end of the season, not including this race. They only have 9 racing weeks left. It's not a lot of time, especially because a lot of these races are back-to-back-to-back. There's a couple of triple headers coming up in the second half of the season, so not exactly a whole lot of time for more negotiation. Will he get this contract signed by the end of the season? I do think so, but I do believe that it will come near the end of the season. We're talking like 1 or 2 races left, and then they'll ink out probably a 1-year deal with the 1-year extension like Mercedes had proposed a couple of weeks ago. I think that's going to be the best bet that Lewis Hamilton is going to get, period. Obviously, he's not getting his ambassador deal. Mercedes said no to $220 million payout for him for the ambassador for 10-year deal. At this point, if I'm Hamilton, I'm just going to continue on racing and I'm going to get what they're going to give me and just kind of be happy with it that I have a contract, period. But who signed then? Who are you wondering? Haas has signed both of their drivers, both K-Mag and Hulkenberg, through the 2024 season. No extension past 2024, so it's kind of a year-by-year basis. I think this is a very intelligent move from Haas. Both drivers, very mature, very realistic options for the amount of money that they're getting paid, and very, very reliable. They can think outside the box when they need to. They can put the hammer down when they need to. They just need, the drivers themselves, they just need the car to be able to keep up with their driving ability and driving skills. This was the first year that Haas was able to spend to the actual cost cap. Now, I was expecting a little bit more of a performance bump from them this season, but realistically, we'll probably see that bump come next season in 2024 and 2025. So, new car next year, better budget, but still very consistent drivers that can learn on the fly and learn at a very, you know, mature pace and, you know, give that proper feedback. Perfect timing for Haas. I think it's fantastic. Congratulations for them. Now we just wait for the other 7 drivers to figure out when they want to sign and if they're going to sign in general. Moving on. If you had watched any of the coverage at all this weekend, you'll know full practice 1 and 2 were on Friday mornings, like 4 o'clock our time. And then respectively, full practice 2 was on Friday, and that was like 8 o'clock, 7 or 8 o'clock our time. Danny Ric, update, broke his wrist, broke his metacarpal in his wrist. He has had surgery already. His wrist has been fixed from the same doctor that fixed Lance Stroll's wrists. Now, if you missed what happened, essentially what Danny Ric did was he sacrificed the body for another driver in a very mature and very sportsmanlike way. So what had happened was, going around a corner, I can't remember which corner it was, Oscar Piastri ended up hitting the wall and he slid back, like he came back a little bit onto the track. So his car was partially exposed. By the time the crash happened to when the red flag came out, Danny Ric was probably, you know, a couple hundred meters away. He saw the yellow flag, wasn't quite fast enough to slow down. So essentially what he did is instead of barreling into the side of Oscar Piastri, he binned his own car into the corner, but just at the angle that he put the car into the wall, the steering wheel jerked ridiculously hard to the right. and he didn't quite let go of the steering wheel in time and ended up breaking his wrist. Like I said, he was flown for medical treatment. His wrist has been worked on already. Realistic timeline. Everyone's saying, oh, he might be back for Singapore. He might be back for, you know, Japan, which Singapore is the next race. Japan is 2 weeks down the road, 3 weeks down the road. I don't expect to see Danny Ric until maybe the third race left in the year. You broke your wrist. Okay, it's fixed. It's healing. That's great. But it's not like you're driving a regular around-the-town type of car. Like, you're not pulling 2.5, 3.5 Gs around a corner when you're in town. This is a type of pressure he'll be adding to a broken wrist that's probably not even fully healed yet. I think he's going to take the time. I think AlphaTauri will extend his temporary contract for next season just for the fact that he has done two races, breaks his wrist, and now he's out for probably 3 or 4 more races. It's not a substantial data size and experience for him to be like, yes, I'm fully confident, and for him to sign another full year contract with AlphaTauri. I think they're going to continue on with the original deal for next season, give him some more experience, and probably do a driver evaluation next mid-season and offer him a full contract for the rest of that year and for 2025. If I was AlphaAtari's, you know, CEO, and if I was in management, that would be the plan that I would follow, just because you know the type of history that Danny Ric brings to the track. You know his consistency, and this is just bad luck. This could happen to anybody on the track. So hopefully we'll see Danny Ric back sooner rather than later and with a speedy recovery. Now, with Danny Ric being out, there's been a couple of questions asking, well, who's going to be his replacement and how long will this replacement be around? Well, I can answer at least one of those things. His replacement is Liam Lawson. He is from the Formula Super Series in Japan. Now, personally, I didn't know there was a Formula Super Series in Japan, so I looked it up. Racing quality is great. Think of it as just another version of Formula 2. Cars are a little different. Tracks are obviously different, but the quality is still the same. And Liam Lawson is in the Red Bull driving family, so he is able to replace anybody for F1, F2, the E-Series, the Super Series. He kind of has that all-around talent that he's naturally has and that he's learned to use. So he'll be Daniel Ricciardo's replacement from now until the foreseeable future. And honestly, even according to all the experts and in my opinion and other drivers that have, you know, seen him, and they just, there's no expectations for Liam. He needs to learn the car. He needs to learn the tracks. He needs to learn the pressure of a Formula One weekend and what all of that entails. Essentially, it's a free, no pressure season. Second half of the season. And as long as Liam figures this out, I think he's going to do just fine. He's going to end up driving some of the trickier tracks and some tracks that get just absolutely pummeled with messed up weather. This weekend being one of them. Japan is going to be another weekend where you can go from slightly overcast to really, really nice to absolutely torrential downpour like we saw the last couple of seasons. So the second half of the season, if you're going to learn something, this is the opportune time to do it. He is going to have more experience in the next, you know, 10 races than he will in his entire, you know, career so far, in my opinion. I think, and I hope he realizes that he doesn't need to blow the competition out of the water. He doesn't need to take unnecessary risks. Just stay between the white lines. Don't crash. Learn as much as you possibly can. That's what the second half of the season is for. As well as, if you do well enough, people are taking notes. They still have a driver's spot open in AlphaTauri for next season. They also have a spot open for Alfa Romeo and a couple of the other teams. So this doesn't only speak to his driving ability for AlphaTauri. This could definitely speak to his driving future in Formula One, period. But Liam Lawson, first weekend, the Dutch Grand Prix. I hope he does really, really well. And as of right now, he's Daniel Ricciardo's replacement. And that, folks, that is the entire Hot Topics for this weekend. It's nice to see that we're down to the racing. There's not a whole lot of off-track rumors such as it is. All we're waiting for now, essentially off-track news, is the drivers that have signed for 2024 and beyond. So let's get right into qualifying. Weather forecast definitely came into play again this weekend, as it has several weekends in the past this season. It was supposed to rain the entire weekend. And essentially, it has rained the entire weekend. It's just not continuous. If it was a continuous rain, then it would be much easier for these drivers and the strategists to deal with qualifying and the race. But as it goes, weather doesn't always cooperate with the plans that everybody has. We're getting intermediate rain every 20 minutes, 30 minutes, then it dries, then it rains again, then it's windy, then it's cloudy. You're literally getting the entire weather forecast in an afternoon. This definitely plays into consideration for speed, driver dependability, and driver traction. Q1, perfect example, super heavy rain to start the qualifying times with, ton of spray. Everyone was on either intermediates or full wet tires, clearing as much water off the track as you possibly can. The times were definitely not earth-shattering by any stretch of the imagination. These guys just wanted to get through Q1 as safely as possible and in one piece. By halfway through Quali 1, about 80% of the rain had been washed off the track due to the wet tires. They're very specifically designed to disperse as much water as possible. With 20 cars and the speed, everyone on the same tires, generally you create a racing line quite quickly. Now, for those of you who don't know, a racing line is essentially the dry part of the track where all the cars will run in the exact same spot. It's the fastest time around the track. It is also, because they've gone over it so many times, it is the only dry part on the track. Dry equals more grip, wet equals less grip, more dangerous, a little more sketchy. So they're trying to create this racing line as quickly as possible. They get the racing line in. Some guys go to intermediate tires. The intermediate tires are meant for a little bit more of this weather. The track can be a little slippery, a little slick, but it's not an absolute deluge of rain at this point. It had relaxed a little bit, so you go to intermediates. Even with the intermediates, there was an absolutely ton of under and oversteer from veteran drivers like Leclerc and Max. What this means is that they're overcorrecting, they're sliding, they're slipping. They're trying to stay away from the painted lines because those have absolutely no grip, which means everyone's got a chance to get out of Q1 and into Q2 because the weather looked like it was going to stay this way the entire time. So track times were down. Drivers were driving safely. No crashes, which was fantastic. But at the same time, you get a little bit of a mixed bag of who gets knocked out of Q1. From 16th to 20th, these are the guys that got knocked out. Zhou Guanyu is 16th. Esteban Ocon, 17th. Kevin Magnussen, 18th. Valtteri Bottas, 19th, and Liam Lawson qualified last. Liam, absolutely not a surprise at all. You're just learning the car, learning the track, drive safely. First part, mission one accomplished. My surprise in this one is 17th and 19th, Esteban Ocon and Valtteri Bottas, respectively. They drive very well in the rain. They really do. They're not, you know, fair weather drivers. They are all weather drivers. But it just seemed that these cars could not get rhythm. They couldn't get pace because the track times were so much slower. All of a sudden you're running into a lot more traffic than you normally would. More traffic means slower driving, more tactical driving. And that's essentially, in my opinion, that's essentially what happened to Ocon and Bottas. They were having okay runs that probably could have got them into Q2. But it was just the traffic that they ended up hitting that slowed them down. There wasn't any impeding penalties in Q1. They were just kind of unable to find the pace with the rest of the pack. Going into Q2, track is drying a lot faster than had been in Q1, but again, a ton of slipping and sliding and understeer and oversteer. And this brought a question to my mind, and for those of you who have watched Formula One long enough and who've listened to this podcast long enough, you probably know where I'm going with this. Tire development, Pirelli says it's the number one thing they're working on, which makes sense. Okay, they put a ton of research, development, new compounds, and innovation into the slick tires, the soft, the mediums, and the hards, which is great. Those are the tires they use, let's say, 80% of the time. But the other 20%, you've got weather like this. It's raining, it's not, it's sunny, it's windy. You don't have ideal track conditions. So you have to go to your inter tires and your wet tires. Pirelli has openly stated that they hardly do any development for their full wet weather tires, which means they don't really know, one, how long they're going to last, two, the quality of the compounds in all weather conditions, which they need to know, and two, if they're even going to keep the all-weather tires. or all wet tires. And in the past, when you see them bring out all wet tires, generally it's too wet to rain or it's too wet to race and it's dangerous, so they don't end up using them anyways. But the intern tires, that tire you use where it's not quite perfect conditions, but it's not horrible, I'm expecting them by this point to have that essentially dialed in as much as the slick tires. Especially because just from this season so far and the second half of this season coming up, you're getting into a lot more weather territory where you're going to get more rain. So you would think that somebody would be developing the intern tires a lot better than they have. I expect to see a lot more grip from these tires. I expect to see them last a lot longer than they are. At this point, slightly disappointed in Pirelli and their developmental timeline for the intern tires. Hopefully they'll get it fixed for the second half of the season and you'll be able to get more consistent track times and safer driving around the track for the drivers in weather like this. So, back to Q2. Weather's getting better. Still a ton of traffic because there's 15 cars out. Not everybody's as comfortable driving in this kind of weather as some drivers. A lot of the veterans, we're talking Max, Alonso, Hamilton, Leclerc, Sainz, they're good at driving in this type of weather. They've done it before. They have enough experience and they have enough confidence in their car where they can put the pedal to the metal a little bit more and they can get where they need to go. On the other hand, you've got drivers like Yuki Tsunoda, Nico Hülkenberg, where with Tsunoda, he doesn't have the confidence yet, plus he doesn't trust his car. Hülkenberg has the experience, doesn't have the car. So you're doing a little bit of six of one, half a dozen of the other. And unfortunately for Q2, Yuki Tsunoda got caught out impeding Lewis Hamilton. Just for that reason, Hamilton's got faith in his car. He also has a better car. He has more experience than Tsunoda. He's putting in a decent track time to get out of Q2. Gets impeded by Tsunoda, who is following another car. Okay, but I don't know if he didn't choose to get out of the way, or he didn't know Hamilton was behind him, or he didn't feel like he had the confidence in the tires and his car to move off the dry racing line to get out of Hamilton's way. Either way, impedes Hamilton on his run. Tsunoda gets a three grid place penalty for the race on Sunday. And unfortunate to see, but it is what it is. Both Hamilton and Tsunoda don't make it out of Q2. Tsunoda just didn't have the pace because he didn't trust his car. Hamilton didn't make it out of Q2 because, in my opinion, because of the impediment from Tsunoda, he wasn't able to recover the rest of the track time appropriately to get another warm up the tires kind of lap to go for his hot lap, as they call it. So from 11th to 15th, Lance Stroll in 11th, Gasly in 12th, Hamilton in 13th. I'm saying it's a massive surprise that he didn't get out of Q2. But 14th, Tsunoda, I'm giving him the blame because of that. 14th was Tsunoda, 15th was Nico Hülkenberg. Again, Hülkenberg, he's got that experience. He knows how to drive in really shit conditions. He just doesn't have the car underneath him. 2024, new contract, like I had said before, with the new budget and the new the new staff they have at Haas, I expect to see the Haas being more accessible and faster in these kind of bad conditions to make it out of Q2 and into Q3. Moving into Q3, Q3 was interesting. That is to say the least. Q3, rain a little bit. We're talking drizzling at this point, but I would say 90% racing line dry. Now, this is where the you have to stay on the racing line kind of mentality comes in, because off that racing line, it's not super wet, but it's enough to make that track a little oily and a little slick. Unfortunately for one specific driver who had made it into Q3, first American since 1993, Logan Sargeant makes it into Q3 in a Williams. Both the Williams make it into Q3. I love this. It's fantastic. And it's for a very specific reason. It's not that Williams made it into Q3 because somebody crashed, because there was an event, or because of penalties. Both Williams made it into Q3 on 100% merit of the driver's ability and the upgrades to the car, which is amazing to see. It's also very encouraging to see for the future of Williams. They're doing the development of the drivers and the cars in a very appropriate way. They're taking their time. They're putting their money where it needs to be in the development of the car. They're not doing, you know, aerodynamic stuff if they don't need to. If it's the small stuff they're going to sweat, it's working out for them. If they need to rehaul the entire car, they have a better direction of where they need to go. Traversely, the drivers have more confidence in their vehicles, which makes them drive better, which gives them better track time, which gives them more positions and points as the constructors and the drivers' championship continues on. It's amazing to see. Unfortunately, when you have a rookie driver like Logan Sargeant, you're still going to get caught out from some things that maybe a veteran driver wouldn't necessarily get caught out. This was the perfect example for Sargeant. He brought out a red flag in Q3. He ends up binning the car into the wall because he touched the white line, the infamous and deadly and sometimes race-ending white line. Now, the white line tells you where to stay on the road. It's kind of like driving at home. You've got your white lines, you stay in between the white lines, you're good to go. But on a Formula One track, when you have this much rain and you've got this much speed and downforce and you've got the tires that you have on, that white line is like ice. You can have traction across the entire road, whether it's wet or dry. Sometimes as soon as you hit that white line, it's all of a sudden like your car's on ice. You have absolutely no traction whatsoever. And at that speed, and for how close the walls are at the Dutch Grand Prix, there's no time to recover. And unfortunately for Logan Sargeant, he had absolutely no time to recover, bins the car. And it's not like, oh no, he, you know, broke a wheel and he scuffed the paint. It's like, oh buddy, like you make it into Q3, first time since '93, congratulations. And you absolutely fucked that car. Like there was not a whole lot left to it. His engineers are going to have one hell of a time overnight repairing and replacing parts for this car. Hopefully he'll be ready to go without a pit lane penalty or without a park firma penalty. A little known fact that if you destroy your car so much, your engineers can only work on your car for so long. Then they have to take a break. They have to go to bed. It's an allotted time. I'm not sure how long it is to be off. Totally granted, I think it's 6 hours from the time they stop to the time they start. It's essentially enough time for them to sleep. If you break that time, you get a grid place penalty. If you break that time by so much, all of a sudden you're starting in the pit lane, which means you're starting 100% last. Hopefully they'll be able to get the car fixed in time where he'll be able to start in Q10, which is where he needs to be. He deserves to be. And it's just one of those. It's just one of those instances, man, that white line claims another car, claims another driver, and another track time. And about 6.5 minutes after that, we got 4 minutes left in Q3. Everything's going hunky-dory. The track is drying out. They're getting faster and faster. Everyone's safe. All of a sudden, the camera just swings to a car. The car is in the wall. Like, oh, God, who was it? Was it Albon in the Ferrari? Was it Norris trying to push the car a little bit too fast? No, unfortunately, it was Leclerc, red flagged, turn 9. He went wide, which people do in this race. People had done in disqualifying with this weather. It just happened to be that time where he goes wide. He hits the white line, which leads to grass. So you definitely have absolutely no grip whatsoever. He ends up sideswiping the wall, and not only does he sideswipe it, but he takes off the side of his car, takes off a wheel, and it's just one of those. You didn't need to go that fast. You were in Q3 anyways. You weren't really going to get that much higher. He was pushing it to the limit like the drivers are supposed to do. But unfortunately for him, ends up binning it, and that's the end of his day. And with Leclerc being out with 4 minutes left, it kind of opened the door for everybody else to really put that track time down. And you could definitely see these guys going faster and faster, trying to catch at one point Lando Norris, who was first by a substantial amount when it came to the standings. But then it comes to the final lap times. Alonso at one point was second, and he wasn't that far behind Norris. By the time everything was said and done, Alonso ended up fifth. Alex Albon, George Russell put in some astonishing track times. But as usual, as the season has gone and as the season will go, Max Verstappen ends up getting first. He ends up getting pole. He is a half a second faster than Norris and almost a full second faster than George Russell, who's in third. He is just a master of all-weather driving. Now, Perez makes it into Q3. We're going to stick with the Red Bull theme. And we're like, okay, well, where did Perez end up? Perez ended up 1 second behind, one and change behind Max. puts him in seventh spot again in qualifying. It's not that Perez is a bad driver. It's not that Perez has a bad car. He has the RB19. He has the best car on the grid. But he's essentially qualifying himself out of work at this point. He still has a contract that goes to the end of 2024, which is all great and dandy. But you can't keep qualifying in seventh and just making up grid spots to get second or third or fourth. You got to be qualifying second. You have the best car on the grid. There's absolutely no excuse for you to be out of the top five in qualifying. There's no reason that you should be out of the top five in racing, whether it's sprint or regular GP weekend. In my opinion, like I said, Perez is just qualifying himself out of a job. He's making it harder and harder for himself every single weekend. Now, Red Bull's won the Constructors' Championship, 100%. They could all come in last for the rest of the 10 races, and they're still going to be fine. Max has won the drivers by several hundred points. It is what it is. Again, he could not finish, and he'll still win. Perez, on the other hand, he's on the bubble. He's still second, which is great, but the drivers behind him keep catching up to him because he has to spend the majority of his races, whether it's a sprint weekend or a GP weekend, catching up instead of maintaining. He should be second. He should be first, second, or third every single fucking weekend. And he can't do it. He can get second and third if he's lucky these days. It's third, fourth, sixth, seventh, fifth. Like, dude, pick a spot. If you can't qualify well, then don't race. He's not going to have his second position in the constructors or in the drivers by the end of the season, I don't think. He is, in my opinion, just not getting progressively worse, but I just think he wants this year to be over. Focus on 2024. All the points are even, and he can do that much better next season. But, man, Perez has got to find a way to not qualify so low. He's got the most positions gained this season by a long shot compared to everybody else in Formula One. It's like over 59 laps or 59 positions right now. You got to stop, bro. You got to be in second. You got to be in third at the worst. So top 10, this is your Q3. This is from your poll to 10th. You've got Max in first, Lando Norris in second, George Russell third, Alex Albon in fourth, Fernando Alonso in fifth, Carlos Sainz in sixth, Checo Perez in seventh, Piastri in eighth, Leclerc ninth, and Logan Sargeant in 10th. And that, folks, is how the race is going to begin for round 14 of the Dutch Grand Prix,
which is what we are about to get into right as we speak. We're talking 14 turns, 72 laps, total distance of 4.2 kilometers, track speed of 327.5 kilometers an hour, fastest lap 1 minute 11, held by the 7-time champion Lewis Hamilton all the way back in 2021. And this race was going to be one of the more interesting ones right off the bat. Kevin Magnussen, pit lane start, brand new PU power unit from the day before. Automatically, he's already hit his allotted amount for the amount of the season. So he's going to start in the pit lane. He's starting 20th. Not quite the way that he wanted to start. He was up in the top 10, but that's how it goes, man. That's some days you win them, some days you lose. Temperature up and down. Rain, stop, rain, stop. It was going to be one of those races. Clouds were supposed to come in around about, 5 minutes into the race. Actually, turns out they were going to come 5 minutes into the formation lap, which is definitely going to throw any type of tire strategy essentially out of the window. But the question was going to be, can you outlast the rain on your slicks, or do you have to come in for a very early pit stop? This race, generally allotted pit stop strategy, one pit stop, maybe two, depending on the weather and depending on how well the tires hold up on the track. Sometimes this track has a tendency to eat up tires like there's no tomorrow. Sometimes you're able to stretch these tires out like you can see some of these drivers do in the first half of the season. If it says the tire's got a life of 21 laps, sometimes these guys can take it to 27, 28, 29 laps. If you're Max, if you're Checo, or even if you're Alonso, you're looking at a little bit more like 34, 35 laps. This definitely not going to be the case. So we're talking 3, 2, 1, lights out, here we go. Literally halfway through the lap, the rain just starts to come down. And we're not talking like, oh, it's kind of raining. It's like, oh, shit, it is raining. What are we going to do? Schedule to last for about 10 to 12 minutes. Do you outlast the rain? Do you pit stop? Well, answer was very shortcoming. After the first lap, we're talking five or six drivers just dive into the pit lane. Very strategically, very fast, also very safe. It was nice to see there was no major crashes. There was no major hangups. First penalty of the race already came. Haas brings in both drivers AlphaTauri brings in Yuki Tsunoda and Liam Lawson in for the tires. Yuki Tsunoda's tire change is a little bit slow. They double stacked, which means Lawson has to essentially just sit there. He ends up blocking Kevin Magnussen in the pit lane, automatically gets a 10-second penalty for pit lane obstruction, essentially, and for impeding as well, although 100% not his fault. He didn't do anything. It was just one of those, hey, you're kind of in the way. There's nothing you can do about it, but kind of it is what it is. 10-second penalty for the rookie. Not exactly the best way to start the race, but still safe. Everybody makes it through. Meanwhile, for the rest of the guys that are on the track, some are limping along, some are being overly cautious, and then there's some people like Fernando Alonso, automatically right off the bat, goes from fifth, goes to second, and he's driving like the Fernando Alonso and the Aston Martin from the beginning of the season. It was amazing to watch. Elbows out, very safe driving, but aggressive in the right spots. He knew when to pass, he knew when to leave it alone. It was just great to see all the way around. So now, effectively, we've got a race on our hands. Fernando Alonso is right behind Max Verstappen. Checo has gone in for tires, a very, very smart move. And then all of a sudden, you're hearing on the radio, Max is like, okay, or the pit wall is asking Max, how do you feel? How are the tires? How are this and that? And not sooner did they ask the question than the strategists come on. They're like, no, you're pitting this lap. You're getting intermediate tires. Fantastic direction from the team. Max didn't even argue. He's like, hey, coming in, grabs his tires, off he goes. Lap two, last seven drivers going for their pit stops, get their new tires. Everything's all fine and dandy. Everyone's around about the 2-second mark, which is fantastic. And then classic, and I mean classic, yet very embarrassing, Ferrari shows up. It is lap two. Leclerc comes into pit. He's going from softs to intermediates, which is fine, or his wet tires. Yet you kind of need, and the pit lane should probably hear this, you need tires in the pit lane to put on the cars. Leclerc shows up, all tires come off, they tweak things here and there, and there's no tires. And he's just sitting there, and sitting there, and sitting there. Respectively, Leclerc goes in before Max, and we're talking by second, maybe two. He goes in, Max comes in, gets his tires, and leaves. Way before the tires were even anywhere near Leclerc's car. Leclerc's pit stop was 8.7 seconds. Like, good job, Ferrari. You know the weather you have. You know everyone's coming in for tires. You know what you need to do. And yet, the tires aren't ready. Good job, guys. You look like the biggest clowns in the history of Formula One right now. It's not like exactly it was a freak decision, a split decision. You knew he was coming in, and yet nothing was done about it. Good job. Meanwhile, whilst all this was happening, there is absolutely no crashes, no minus Liam Lawson's 10-second impeding penalty, no impediment, nobody sliding off the track, no big crashes. It was great to see. These guys were taking it cautiously, appropriately. Great speed, great time, great communication from all teams, from all tires, or from all teams to all engineers. It was great to see. It was kind of like a really wet ballet. A ballet in the rain, if you were. It was just ebb and flow and passing, and it was fantastic to see. Everything's all hunky-dory. Off the way we go, lap 10. All of a sudden, the track's drying out by lap 7, 8. So, I mean, not that further on down the road. The rain has stopped. Like I had mentioned before, this track has a tendency to dry out very quickly. We're talking 26, 27 degrees Celsius on the track side. And it was just that racing line just started to appear faster and faster and faster. Okay, so what do? There's supposed to be rain further on down. You're on either heavy wets or intermediates. Do you go to slicks? Now, do you go to intermediate? Do you stick with your intermediates and just kind of wait it out? Some guys did a little bit of both. Some guys did the intermediates. Some guys went to slicks. But by lap 10, we're talking probably 11 or 12 cars go back in for slicks, and now it's off to the races once more. Another pit stop, again, really smooth, a lot of communication. It made for a lot of unintentional passing. Total overtakes was almost 200 overtakes in this race, and that's mainly, in my opinion, mainly because of the pit stops from the rest of the teams. Everyone was doing very, very well. A little bit more driving strategy was starting to come out opposed to just tire strategy. Lap 13, Max goes in for a new set of slicks. So he's officially undercut Checo. Checo went in for tires first. You would think Checo would go in first again just to continue to stay first in this place, or in this case, Max is second. Different strategies for different drivers, which is totally fine, even on the same team. Max and his engineers decide to go in. He's going to get his slicks, and he undercuts Checo. On the radio, not, you know, 5 seconds, 10 seconds later, maybe a full lap, all of a sudden Checo's like, did Max undercut us? Like, he's asking, did Max go in for new tires? And his engineers say yes. And you can hear the disdain and the disappointment in Checo's face. Like, oh, it was, he's not supposed to undercut me. This was a difference. He was supposed to, like, support me, or the idea that Max is supposed to be there to help him win this race. Checo, I like you. You're awesome. Let me just inform you that even if you went in first for new tires and Max didn't go for tires for another 5 laps, he's still going to pass you. He has the faster car. He is the faster driver no matter what. So whether he undercut you or you went in for tires many laps later, it was just prolonging the inevitable that he was going to pass you. That with him undercutting you, it eliminates several things that maybe you don't realize at the same time. One, it's eliminating potential team orders to let Max pass because he's faster. Two, it eliminates, because the weather is so unpredictable, it takes out the factor that maybe if you guys are racing against each other, albeit respectively, someone can hit the white line and spin out and take somebody else out. That way, Red Bull's not getting points at all. Three, if there is some kind of, you know, movement, if there is some kind of contact, whether it be big or small, you're saving the car parts. Car parts are very expensive, as you all know, and both of the Red Bull cars are coming up to some of their limitations before they start getting grid penalties for some of the smaller pieces. So you don't want to be risking grid point penalties just because one of your teammates is a little bum hurt because he got passed. Checo, you got to realize you're not the fastest car. You're not the faster car. Just kind of deal with what you got and just at least try to finish in the top three. That would be my concern more for him, and that's what he should be more concerned about, in my opinion, period. With the race of this unpredictability, you would expect a lot more drama to be happening. Now, the drama that we did have was all safe. It was pit lanes, it was new tires, it was all sorts of things like that. But you would almost expect there to be more contact, more crashes, and a few more cars not being able to actually finish the race. Well, that's not the case this time, all the way up until lap 16. Not his fault. Big red exclamation mark, not his fault. Logan Sargeant, he made it up into the top 10. He's still having a good race. He's still in the top 10, relatively close, just to all the pit changes and the new tires. Lap 16 comes along. Logan Sargeant just smashes into the wall off camera. Quick flip to the car. He's demolished the front. He's demolished the side. And we're like, what has happened? It appeared to be that he just missed the corner. Going too fast, not able to make the corner because the track is wet, just kind of goes off. In reality, totally not his fault. 100% mechanical failure. He ends up blowing a hydro line, hydro pressure line, which gives him absolutely no steering whatsoever. So he's going into the corner on the proper line. He blows a hydraulic line, and all of a sudden, he's got no steering. The direction of which he is going, that's the direction he's going to end up. He's trying to brake. He locks up the tires. It doesn't help him at all. Smashes into the wall, and you can see the devastation on his face. You can see how visibly upset this man is that he has tried his damnedest, and he was on, in my opinion, he was on track to get his first good set of points of the season, if not the first points, period, top 10, and it's just the devastation and the look of, I can't believe this happened to me, on his face. So much so that it took him 45 minutes to get back to the pit lane. It wasn't because he wasn't able to get there. It was just because he was so devastated that he just couldn't, he couldn't face that drive. He couldn't face his teammates quite yet. Totally understandable. It would have been an amazing result for him. I feel so super sorry for him. But again, racing is racing. And another perfect example of that, George Russell at the beginning of the race started 13th. By the time you get to the 16th lap, he's gone all the way down to 15th spot. They did the tire change at the time, wrong selection of tires. They put him on hards, which means he has traction, but not as much as everybody else. And it also takes him 5 or 6 laps longer than everybody else to get that grip to bring the tires into temperature and then to get racing. His strategists must have, his strategists must have a crystal ball of where this car will end up. Because why would you put it on hards when you have absolutely no grip in the rain? It's not exactly the brightest idea. But at one point on these hards, an amazing race, everyone's gone to pit. All of a sudden, George Russell's up into 4th. And then all of a sudden, he's up into 3rd. He's doing very, very well. He's putting these tires exactly where they needed to be. Perfect, you know, perfect temperature, perfect wear for these kind of wet conditions. He's almost made an intermediate tire out of a hard, slick tire, which takes in and of itself a ton of skill and a ton of trust in the tire itself and the car itself. So, inevitably, you have to go in for a pit change. Okay, so you go in, get some new tires. Okay, that's fine. You get the tires. Now, all of a sudden, Russell's used to the tires that are worn, that are a little bit older, that have a little bit more grip. All of a sudden, he's got new tires, and he's not nearly as fast. So all of a sudden, his strategy is starting to go to shit, essentially. Just further down, all of a sudden, he's 12th. And then he just keeps going down, and then all of a sudden, you hear, I'm off. Essentially, what he did is he ran too long on, I think it was the second or third corner. And in a race that is this tight, he goes from perspective points in the pole, and he drops down, and he doesn't recover. He goes all the way down to 17th. He finishes dead last for the cars that are still on the track. Now, where did the strategy go? Where did the tires go? I think he got a little bit too used to the worn, hard tires. He got used to the traction. He was driving very consistently. He was driving quite cautiously, but still keeping up with the boys. But now when you lose a tire preservation like you have, when you lose the comfortability of your old set of tires for something new, you still have to now learn where these tires are. You have to learn and remember how the car is going to react while still keeping pace with everybody else who has worn tires. They're very comfortable with them. They've got them in the perfect zone, and they're going much faster than you. So all of a sudden, now you got to try to play that catch-up game. It doesn't happen for him. Finishes 17th, not quite the strategy that they were hoping for, but hey, nonetheless, again, that's racing for George Russell. Very, very, very disappointed. I expect for him to bounce back next week with a fire and an intensity that most drivers will only recognize as, oh my God, here he comes. He's getting those points. He's getting that podium finish. And after that, for a certain period of time, the weather was okay. A little bit of drizzle here and there. It wasn't sunshiny and blue skies and rainbows and all that kind of stuff, but the cars were in their element. The drivers had figured out what the tires were like. Really good speed. Again, a ton of passing. Like I had mentioned earlier, almost 200 passes and overtakes in this race. It is the highest in Formula One history. It made the race ridiculously exciting outside of the weather, because you didn't know who was going to pass, because everyone was passing everybody. It wasn't just the top tier teams, but everybody had a chance to overtake and then get their spot back and make a move and keep everybody on their toes for what was going to happen. And we're all good, all the way up to lap 41. And then all of a sudden, Leclerc goes back into the pit and he doesn't come out. We're like, okay, so we thought he was going in for a pit stop, you know, try a new strategy, get some new tires, and all of a sudden they just retire the car. To this point of recording, we still don't know what happened to the Ferrari. There hasn't been any word. It had to have been a mechanical issue, because he didn't crash into anything. He had a slight wing damage from a little bit of collision earlier on in the race, but definitely not enough to slow him down. The only thing that I can possibly assume is it's something in either the electrical harness or we're talking something about power unit components. And in a race like this, if you're in the position of Leclerc, you're not in the points. People are passing you quite easily. There's no point in putting mileage and wear and tear on the car and the parts itself. It's kind of self-preservation. Lap 41, just call it quits. Try to figure it out. Come back next week, understand what went wrong, and then go for those points. An unfortunate finish for Leclerc. He didn't exactly have the best race, but at the same time, I think it was a very intelligent move. The strategists and the team finally got it right, just calling him in instead of letting him limp around for another 31 laps. So, unfortunately, DNF for Leclerc, but, you know, it's kind of the theme of this podcast. Hey, what can you do? It's racing. And I guess at this point in the race, Mother Nature felt a little left out, going, well, I haven't done anything interesting in the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes. So let's do something interesting. Let's throw a monkey wrench into this race. Lap 61, the rain starts again. And it doesn't just start. It's like, it's raining. And then lap 62, it's like, it's raining. By the time you hit lap 64, it's like, oh my good Lord. Like, we're pitting again for full wet tires. Like, it was absolutely pouring down. Most of the drivers got in for new wet tires. Max Verstappen did. Perez went in for new tires. He got caught out with a red flag. So he kind of got a free pit stop, but it also kind of screwed him because he lost a couple of track positions. The reason why he got screwed on track, Joe Guan Yu, not exactly the season that he has wanted this season, not exactly the start to the second half that he wanted, straight into the wall. He's trying to make it around to the track or to the pit wall to get new tires. He ends up going into the runoff area, which is supposed to be able to slow you down so you can get back on track safely. He was going just so fast. He locked up his tires just straight into the wall, instantly brought out a red flag. They had to fix the Tech Pro barrier. He went in a couple of feet. Like the Tech Pro barrier before you get to the actual metal wall, I guess, like the last ditch effort for safety. You're talking a couple of feet. It's like 6 or 7 feet. And the car went in probably 3 or 4 feet. He was going that fast. Totally fine. Able to get out of the car on his own strength, on his own steam. Brings out a full red flag. The race is done. The race is suspended for now. You got to wait because it's raining that hard. Can you see? Probably not. Let's see how long the weather's going to hold on like this. 45-minute delay. The drivers are out of the cars. They're trying to dry themselves off, trying to gather their thoughts. In the meantime, while they're figuring this stuff out, all of a sudden a 5-second penalty display comes across the screen, and it's a 5-second penalty for speeding in the pit lane to Checo. All of us are like ridiculously confused. We're like, how does this work? How did he speed in the pit lane? Pit lane speed is 60 kilometers an hour, and Red Bull has the very first garage in the pit lane. So the way the pit lane is set up, if you don't know, is the better you do, the closer you are to coming into the pit lane, but you have a longer slow speed through the pit lane. So it's supposed to even things out. You're the first one in to get tires distance wise, but it takes you longer to get through the pit lane. Traversely, the worse you do, the further in the pit lane you are, but the closer you are to getting to full speed going back onto track. Red Bull being number one, obviously, they're the first one into the pit lane. So everyone's trying to figure out what happens here. You're looking at the onboard camera. Coming into the pit lane, Checo ends up losing control a little bit, and he clips the sidewall with the back of his car. It's nothing massive. There's a little bit of damage. But what that clip does is it doesn't allow him to slow down enough before he crosses that 60 kilometer an hour zone. And there's automatic sensors there to track how fast the car is. He crosses the line relatively slowly. His speed is 60.9 kilometers an hour. Because he clipped that wall, he was almost a full kilometer an hour over, which gives him that 5-second penalty. Not only that, but when the race had red flagged, because of where Checo ended up pitting to get new tires, he had dropped from third to sixth. So now everyone's going, well, the red flag was out. Does he lose position? Does he not? The only bright side of this rainbow for him is that he was able to go from sixth. He got his third place spot back, but now he's got to make up 5 seconds. And by the time the race was ready to go, we had 66 lap. We were on lap 66. Standings are rolling start. Rain had eased off. You can see all the water on the track. They're doing a rolling start, which I think was the most intelligent thing they could do. Earlier in the season, there was a bunch of crashes. There was a bunch of drama that they kept doing standing starts. So it's like the beginning of the race. Everybody lines up in their respective spots, and you can go 3-2-1 go, which just caused more drama and more damage. Right call from the FIA, right call from the stewards. It's going to be a rolling start. They did 2 full laps behind the safety car to try to get some kind of dry line in there. It kind of worked, kind of didn't. But now they've got just enough line where they can actually race. But now Checo's got to try to figure out, how do you make up 5 seconds on someone like Pierre Gasly, who is right behind him? Pierre's having a very quiet but very successful race. He had also gotten a 5-second penalty for, I believe, speeding in the pit lane as well, which he overcame in a heartbeat. He took his 5-second penalty on one of the 5 pit stops that most of these teams did, and was easily able to make up that 5 seconds on the track. The Alpine was just, it was on rails today. It very smooth drive, very solid drive. Both drivers ended up in the top 10. They were driving very well when they were driving beside each other. There was no drama, there was no team orders. It was a very organized and very well race for Alpine, which is definitely what they needed. Now, what Gasly needs to do is he needs to stay close to Perez as much as possible. And to Checo's horror, I guess in this case, Gasly was up to the challenge. There was no gap further than like 3.5 seconds between these two cars all the way until the end. It made for a very, very interesting and very fascinating and tension-filled race, at least for third back. First and second, very comfortable. Fernando Alonso, Max Verstappen, kind of battling, kind of not for the last few laps. I do think Alonso, if he could have taken first, in my opinion, if he really, really, really wanted to. He was close enough. He was driving with that intent like at the beginning of the season that, in my opinion, in the conditions that there were, he is a much better bad, unpredictable weather driver than Max is. I think he could have thrown the elbows out and he could have passed him a couple of times, or at least made Max make a mistake. But it's still a daunting task. But Max and Alonso out playing their own little game, doing their own little race. Gasly and Perez. Perez finishes third, but the distance and the time between Perez and Gasly, only 2.4 seconds. All of a sudden, Checo, who should have been on the pole, all of a sudden you're in fourth, catapults Gasly onto the podium for third place finish. And it was great. It was amazing to watch. When all things were said and done, Max wins again, his 9th in a row. He ties an F1 record with Sebastian Vettel. Also, when he was a Red Bull driver, 9 wins in a row. It is tying the Formula One record. He has an opportunity, in my opinion, to break the record next week and the week after that. There's only 10 races left in the season. Can Red Bull go all the way and do a clean sweep of the entire season? Now, in my opinion, if they do, it will be a clean sweep with an asterisk beside it, because they do have a canceled race. I do believe it was Spa, if my memory serves me correctly, that there was too much rain. They couldn't, or not Spa. It was Imola due to rain and flooding. It'll be a clean sweep for the races that they drive, but I don't think that's going to make Red Bull or Max happy enough. I think the next season they're going to want to go for an absolutely full clean sweep, all races driven. They're going to push for that. But as it stands right now, Max Verstappen wins the race, 9th in a row, ties F1 record. Congratulations. Great for him. Not as easy of a race as it normally is for Max, which is amazing to see. As a Red Bull fan, as a Formula One fan, I want to see my team win, obviously, but I also like it when it's not an easy win, or it's not a walk in the park. Everybody had to deal with the weather. Everybody had to deal with the strategies changing and the number of pit stops and everything along that line. So happy that Max won. happy that he had to work for this a little bit more. So, top 10. Finishing first through 10, Max was first, Alonso was second, Gasly is third, Perez fourth with that 5-second penalty, Carlos Sainz was fifth, Lewis Hamilton was sixth, Lando Norris was seventh, Alex Albon was eighth, Oscar Piastri was ninth, and rounding out the top 10 was Esteban Ocon. Another really, really great drive from McLaren today. They had that new wing that was a little bit lighter, a little bit more scooped out. It works really well. And it worked really well in a set of weather conditions that are not exactly ideal for testing out new car parts. McLaren is the real deal. They're here to perform. They're here to compete. And they are going to get these points in the second half of the season. Drivers' championships. Max Verstappen, well in the lead. 339 points. Second, Checo Perez with 201. Fernando Alonso is third with 168. Hamilton is in fourth with 165. With Carlos Sainz's finish, he leapfrogs Leclerc and Russell into fifth with 102 points. Leclerc drops from fifth to sixth with 99 points, tied with Russell as well with 99 points. Lando Norris is in eighth with 75. Lance Stroll is in ninth with 47 points, and Pierre Gasly leapfrogs back up into 10th with 37 points to round out the top 10. Constructors' championships, folks, it's done. It's officially, it's over, in my opinion. Red Bull, 540 points. Number two is Mercedes with 255 points. Aston Martin with 215 points. They're still sticking with it just because Alonso, pretty much, but it's starting to get stretched out just a little bit more. Aston Martin in third with 215 points. Ferrari in fourth with 210. McLaren now solidly in fifth with 111 points. Can they catch Ferrari? They need another 100 points. If Piastri and Norris keep landing the points they are, I think it's going to come down to the last two races of the season, but there is potential for McLaren to catch Ferrari or at least tie them for fourth. Alpine is in sixth with 75 points. Williams is in seventh with 15 points. Eighth is Haas with 11 points. Nine is Alfa Romeo or Sauber with 9 points. And holding up the basement this season is AlphaTauri in 10th with 3 points. Folks, that is the breakdown of your Dutch Grand Prix. I think it was an amazing race. In my opinion, story of the race, it's not one driver, not one recovery. I'm going to give the story of the race, going to give all the credit to the pit crews and the strategists in this case, the what I'm going to call the unsung heroes of the Formula One race teams, because of the weather, because for how chaotic it was. It could have been an absolute cluster. There could have been teams that didn't pit when they were supposed to. There could have been teams that just absolutely missed windows, got too many pit stops in, didn't get enough pit stops in. But due to the strategists and the high level that the high level of research and just the quality of work that these people put in week out, it was an amazing job. It made the race super smooth. It made it very, very interesting. Maybe a few more pit stops than these guys wanted to do. But because of the pit crews and because of the strategists, it was, in my opinion, the most exciting race to watch so far this season. And I'm going to throw my vote into the ring going, this will be the most exciting race that we will see all the 2023 season. Next race. When is the next race? You're asking. You want to know. Well, here it is. September 1st to 3rd weekend. This coming up weekend, it is the Italian Grand Prix. Ferrari fans, either you love this race or you hate this race. It's going to be interesting no matter what. This course always has a lot of drama attached to it. Not necessarily bad drama, but a lot of you miss the corner, you're done drama. Pit lanes are a little bit on the shorter side, but not by a lot. Pit lane strategy is definitely high in this race, so there could be a lot of positional changes. Can Ferrari beat Max on home soil this time? Can Red Bull finally not win a race this season? Only time will tell. Qualifying Saturday 8 a.m. Race Sunday 7 a.m. So not too bad for us on the weekend in Canada. Still, if set your PVR, set your DVD, or if you're going to be someone like me, be up bright and early. Pre-race is at 7:30. You want to know all the goings on before the race. It's just that little extra level of enjoyment. Little bit of a side note, everybody, this is a special episode for me and for everybody here at F101. this is officially my 50th episode. So I would just want to send out a massive thank you to all my listeners out there for the support of the FTN network in believing in the quality of work that I bring every week. Sometimes there's some technical issues, but they have faith in me to bring all the relevant information to all the F1 fans out there. So a massive thank you very much to everybody out there. 50 episodes. I can't wait to do another 50 more and then 100 more after that. And I'm definitely going to be here for years and years to come. So everybody out there, thank you very much.